T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Okay, if we're giving random shout-outs to Chicago radio shows, Parkins and Spiegel, obviously the best.
Afternoons on the Score.
DeRozan, still working. Pump fake, flipped it up.
Kobe. I know he's yelling in his head. James Harden is somewhere in Brooklyn right now.
Help me out here.
Can I get that call? Steph Curry doesn't. I got a technical against the Clippers because he didn't get that call. So there's some guys probably sitting at home right now going, DeMar DeRozan gets that call every game.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Bulls win in the hot ball versus ball matchup with LeVar there watching. It was Nikola Vucevic who stole the show. Let's talk about that and more with friend of the show, Adam Amin, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You watch and hear Adam on NBC Sports Chicago. That was a fun one last night. There's the big three, right, Adam? There's the big three all showing up, all scoring, all looking comfortable. That was exciting to watch, wasn't it?
What do you know? They can all put together 70-plus points on any given night against, now granted, against a team that has a lot to learn and execute on the defensive end. In Charlotte, we know they're a high-paced team that gives up a lot of points. But the Bulls, I feel like, could be at their best when they can play at a higher pace. And I feel like there's been evidence of that all season long. The pace is up. And when the pace is up, other guys are getting involved. Then you don't feel like you have to get LaVine or DeRozan as involved in the offensive sets. You can give Nikola Vucevic 12 shots in the first half. You can get him that many looks and get him comfortable and get him engaged, because when he's engaged, this is a really good team at both ends. He's much more engaged on defense, as a lot of guys often are when they're playing well on the offensive end. And we saw that last night. He was engaged from start to finish because they got him shots early. They got him good looks. I know Charlotte tried to counter with Nick Richards, who's not a starter and has a little bit of size without Mason Plumlee. They went smaller with P.J. Washington, and Vucevic took advantage of matchups. Any given night, Spiegs, I feel like there's going to be one matchup that the Bulls have to find, you have to exploit. And I thought it was the perfect time, whether it was a concerted effort, which I do feel like it was, or not, you have to find the one exploitative matchup. And I think last night it was Vucevic's turn, and it proves further that everybody can be engaged and everybody can get their opportunities and everybody can get their shots on any given night.
I think it was a concerted effort. Billy Donovan basically said he needed to do it after the Heat game on Saturday night. And then there they did. But as you say, all three of them going 12 of 15 for 29 points in the third quarter for just those three guys. You know, outscoring the Hornets alone, essentially, in the quarter. Those three guys. You and Stacey, and it's such a great broadcast, mixing in some of the X's and O's and the fun and everything. We're talking about some of the slipping of screens that was going on last night. But what looked different in terms of Vooch's usage, if anything, on the floor? Because he can obviously play as a guy who faces the basket. He can play as a guy who has his back to the basket in the post. He can hit threes. What looked different last night, if anything, about his usage?
Well, first and foremost, he made the shots, right? And that's something that we've been waiting on. This is a guy who's been a very good for his size three-point shooter in his career. And obviously we saw that in a good chunk of the season with the Bulls last year. He was not good to start this season. He just hasn't been shooting well for the first 15, 20 games. And when shots go down, that opens opportunities up. I think we've seen a lot of those pick and pop, pick and flash actions where you get Vucevic either in a mid-range spot or you get him at the top of the key, which is his favorite spot for three. Those are the spots that he likes to be at on the floor for jump shots. And obviously, if he can move in the interior, all the better. I think the Bulls, for the most part, early in games, first halves of games, have tried to get him those looks. And most days, at least at the beginning of the season, at the outset of this year, those shots have not gone down. When they go down early, you knock down one or two, he feels good. He feels better. So then you feel like you can use those actions later in a game to either play that same action and try to get another look at the top of the key or from the angle from 17, or you can do an adjunct action off of that and use a pick and dive or use a pick and roll action or let him slip a screen. And the way he did with Lonzo, when Lonzo drove baseline and Vucevic kind of flared off when the defense was drawn in, he gets more opportunities like that when he's able to make shots early in a game, whether it's mid-range or from 3 points. So I think that was the biggest difference. And that's why you were able to see some of the other actions as the game went on. We talk about a running game, right? And I've got the Bears on Sunday, and I'm sure it'll be a topic of conversation for Mark Schlereth to discuss the Bears running attack. But I feel like when you run the football effectively in the first half of a game, whether you only get 2 yards a carry, 3 yards a carry, or whatever, you're still setting things up for later in the game to be able to build a play action game, a pass game, an intermediate throwing game, whatever it may be. You're setting things up for later, but you still have to execute early to be able to set things up for later. And when the Bulls are able to execute early with Vucevic, that allows them to expand their usage of him into different actions in the second half of the game.
Adam Amin doing the Bears. Oh, what game did you have? I heard you on my Red Zone. Was it Atlanta, Jacksonville? Is that where you were?
We had Eagles Giants this past week.
Oh, okay, Eagles Giants. That's a better caliber of game.
you say that, Speak. You say that, yeah. But is it? No, I'm kidding. It was competitive and it went out of the way.
Hey, do you mind if I ask you? I'm fascinated by this, like the depth chart and the game assignments. I want to get back to the Bulls, but as long as you took us there, like I've always been sort of it shed some light on that world, like how that goes. Like, you know, do they literally like assign crews in order to the games that they think are going to have the most viewers? How does that work, Adam?
If I had to boil it down, I wouldn't put, you know, I wouldn't pretend to know what my bosses think or how it works exactly. But just in general television experience, I do think that's generally the case. Okay. I think, yeah, if you want to call us the number three crew, we're the number three crew. If you want to call us the number four crew, we're the number four crew. If you think we're the worst crew in the history of football broadcasting, we're the worst crew in history of broadcasting. Any of those you think are right, but essentially we're the number three crew when it comes to getting a crack at, you know, whatever the third best available game is. Part of that is some weeks you have a doubleheader on Fox. Some weeks you have a doubleheader on CBS. When you have the doubleheader on Fox, that means Joe Buck and his crew, the A crew, are doing a game on Sunday. Kevin Burkhardt and his crew are doing a game. And then our crew is doing a game as well. And it's kind of in the sense of, all right, where's the audience going to be? What's the importance of the game? And which crews are working. Okay. That's a general idea.
All right. Well, so first of all, salute to General Idea, who is an officer held in very high regard.
Major lessons. You know, he's very important as well.
Yes.
You know, very important to that hierarchy.
Right. Yes. Private practice is underneath.
Yes, exactly.
Underneath that guy. and now I want to look at the schedule and see if I think Bears Cardinals really qualifies as the third best game on Fox. I don't know. I'll have to look at that. But I'll nerd out about that later. As you've watched these Bulls, you get a unique opportunity to see during the breaks and as they, you know, meet with the coaches, talk to the coaches. They've been dealing with a weird and bad loss in Houston, a beat down at home from Indiana. Do you notice anything different in their energy or their body language during or after those kind of uglier performances? Because we haven't seen those really until this past week. Haven't seen anything like it until this past week. And that stuff's going to happen in a regular season.
Yeah, and I think what DeRozan said the other day after the loss to Miami, which ended, you know, the week of kind of bad losses. I'm not saying the Miami loss was bad, but the Indiana loss, the Houston loss in particular, I think he summed it up pretty well. He goes, it was a bad week. It was a bad week, and those things are going to happen. And you said it too, Speaks. And I know it's not the salve and the balm that a Bulls fan is going to want to use, because they want answers. They want to go, well, why did you guys play this poorly? What's your energy? There's a lot of different factors to it. I think just from in a less than astute observer, I think is how I would describe myself. I'm not gonna try to play, you know, armchair psychologist about every player on the team. But I do get the sense that there was a lack of energy over the course of the last, let's call it 8 days. I think, honestly, and maybe this is an excuse, maybe it's not, I'm just trying to observe it. It did feel like the grueling West Coast trip, as well as they played for the most part, even through the loss against Portland that they should have had, they played very well on the West Coast. And when you get settled in, that first game against Golden State wasn't good. When you get settled into the time zone, the body clock, all that stuff, I do think they got into a very good rhythm. And then they came back and had to play, you know, the tough game against the Knicks, and they were able to deliver it. I think they were spent. I think they had exhausted so much of what had made them good, the pace, the high-octane defensive efforts that led to a lot of points on the offensive end in transition. I don't think they had the legs. I think they were out of gas. And getting a chance to be at home for a couple of days, you're going to travel to the East Coast now and be at the same place for, you know, 4 days, whatever it is, against the Knicks and the Nets, I think you should see, or at least expect to see, an energy level that fits the caliber of team that we expect to be out on the floor every night.
Has Zach LaVine adjusted better to the wrist injury, or is it healing? Maybe it's just dribbling less. I notice it less. He's such a silky smooth player. But it was noticeable there for a few games. Do you feel like you notice it less at this point?
I think I do actually, and I agree with both things that you said, Speaks. I think it is a factor of healing. He's been going through warm-ups without the wrist tape, and the, you know, the ligament has been improving. They talked about it too. It was strictly a matter of pain tolerance, because as long as he doesn't hit it really hard, or it gets into another situation where, you know, a guy is, you know, hooking him or whatever it may be, and that thumb or that hand gets contorted in a way that he doesn't want it, it's strictly a matter of pain tolerance, and it should heal gradually. He's been going through warm-ups without the tape on his hand. He is dribbling less. And I think that's another factor for this team, Spiegs, is the ball movement. I mean, when does this team struggle? It's when they get stagnant. And I know that's a lot of teams offensively in the NBA, but this is a team that's so athletic that their small ball lineup a lot of nights, and Stacey's talked about it on the air, their small ball lineup a lot of nights is going to be just frankly more talented than the other small ball lineup. That doesn't mean they're going to win every game with that lineup, or that the other team is going to have a great night with their lineup. But I think just talent across the board, there aren't that many small ball lineups that can factor up with the Bulls athletically and scoring wise. And when they're moving, when they're cutting, you know, you saw with Caruso kind of being one of the few guys the other night that was doing it in big spots against Miami. Last night, everybody was moving. Everybody was cutting. Everybody was moving well. There was always an extra pass. There was a lot less dribbling in general. And I think LaVine is kind of a microcosm of that. When the ball is moving, he's not going to be dribbling as much. And I think the combination of that and just the gradual healing process, I think he's getting used to just having a hand at full strength again.
I hadn't thought about Boogie Cousins in a long time, and then there he is, signed by Milwaukee today. And then I thought, damn it, that'd be a pretty nice backup big to have. I wonder if he would have fit into the culture and the mindset. And like, Boogie had a while there where I felt like he was misunderstood, and actually what he and Anthony Davis were doing together in New Orleans was fascinating and really interesting for a while. Such a good player. I wonder if he would have fit. What do you think?
I think so. And that's, again, I have no data to back that up. I have no, you know, association with Boogie to be like, oh yeah, Boogie's personality based on my personal and close interactions with him would fit great. I just feel like what he brings at the price that he probably would demand, which would probably be a very low price relative to a lot of other guys that are out there, I felt like it was worth kicking the tires on at worst. And I'm sure a lot of teams have thought that about Boogie Cousins, and it hasn't always worked out. But I felt like for what this particular roster needs right now, that would have been a good move. Now, that being said, there's a long way to go before the trade deadline. There's a long way to go in terms of looking at free agents and signing guys and trying to figure out who else can work on this particular roster. So I don't want to, like, give up hope that, well, they're clearly not interested in going after a backup big. I don't think that's the case. But this has been, for the most part, a good evaluating front office. So I'd like to think that they do have a second plan and or a plan B. If Boogie was your plan A, I'd like to think they have a plan B in mind somewhere down the line. But I would have liked to see it, Speak.
Yeah, me too, man. And it would have been entertaining. Oh, that dude
nothing
is fun.
Nothing else, man. Yes. There's nothing else. This group has been, if nothing else, very entertaining, and that would have added a little bit of intrigue to it. And obviously the Lonzo, you know, New Orleans connectivity with Boogie, that would have been interesting too.
Yeah, it's true. A couple more minutes with Adam Amin, Bulls play-by-play man for Embassy Sports Chicago, among other gigs. What is your take on the Coby White and IO usage? Can they exist together? It's sometimes they have, sometimes they've been staggered. How's that all going to go at this point?
I mean, doesn't it feel like one of those play it by ear night in and night out type of things, which is not fun. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to have to evaluate the first 6 minutes of each guy's night every night and go, well, you're going to play the third quarter. You're getting like players don't want to deal with that. Obviously they don't want to have to navigate through a situation where their playing time is going to be dictated by the first 6 minutes they play because guys press at that point. But I think that might end up being the case because you don't know consistently right now what you're getting out of Coby on an offensive basis. Now I will say this. I thought that the other night against Orlando, he was so engaged on the defensive end, and maybe IO being out there and playing bigger minutes and playing a bigger role, maybe that was enough for Coby to go, you know what, I'm not playing well offensively right now, even though I know he's got the capability, as he proved the other night. He's just not playing consistently, and maybe knowing that, seeing IO play the minutes that he's playing, playing the defense that IO is asked to play against some pretty good competition from second units and sometimes first units, maybe that was enough to say, I've got to be more engaged on the defensive end. And that's always a positive. So, yeah, you can get minutes on this team by playing defense. And I think maybe that was the switch flip for Coby White. Maybe that'll be the case going forward. But right now, I wish it weren't the case, but it feels like you're going to have to evaluate night in, night out, and see, all right, well, which one of these guys is feeling it? Is one of these guys feeling it offensively, or which one of these guys is engaged on the defensive end? Because that's why I need to play in, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes in a couple different quarters a night.
We're seeing the inspiration of teammate style all over the roster, so that's completely in play. Hell, we've seen it with Zach, who's giving you more defensively and moving the ball like Lonzo. You know, it's a beautiful thing. These are young men still with the adaptability and the ability to improve. All right, last thing, Adam, and this is, you know, very personal. I want to hang out with Mo Cheeks. I loved that dude as a kid. Such a smooth, great point guard game with Dr. J and the Sixers. And then the famous moment where he helps the little girl finish the anthem when he was the coach in Portland. He's one of those guys I've never met, but who I just assume is a gem. Have you interacted with Mo Cheeks at all here with the Bulls?
Anytime I get a hand on the shoulder from Mo, it's just like you feel at ease. You feel calm. He's a good man. He says hello on the plane. Gives you a little fist bump, puts his hand on your shoulder.
Ugh.
And he's just you talked about steady presences, right? Like, this is a team mostly made of young guys. You know, obviously DeRozan's been around a long time, and Vucevic is a veteran, certainly, but they're still young people who are still seeking that pinnacle of their careers. You know, Caruso's the only guy on this team with the title. So these are a lot of, I don't want to say easily influenced by any means. These are men in their own right, but I think Mo has a lot of influence on how they go about the day-to-day operations of being a good NBA team. And that's something that's a lot of these guys just haven't been used to on a consistent basis. And that presence is very important. He's played in some of the biggest games that you'll remember in the 1980s. Those Celtics Sixers rivalry playoff game.
Yep.
He was a key part. I mean, he has played in some of the toughest environments, some of the most difficult atmospheres, against some of the toughest dudes that have played this game in the last 50 years. And to have that on your bench is just, it's an invaluable thing. And then just alone the presence, you know, when he sees you, gives you a hello, you feel like you have his respect or something along that line. And it makes you feel better.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the fun things about getting older and seeing these guys evolve into coaches. That was his vibe as a player. Like that Sixers team was with Dr. J was obviously crazy talented, but Andrew Toney was a volatile scorer, and they had all these, and he was just calm as hell and ran the whole show. So same guy as he moves on. All right, Adam Amin, a pleasure, buddy. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy the call on the Bears and the Cardinals this Sunday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Speaks. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. That's Adam Amin joining us right here on 670 The Score. All right, a lot to do. Later in the hour, a reminder of why Brian Kelly is a bad guy. But we need to talk about the Cubs signing. And, man, you people, you need some context on Clint Frazier. And I want to offer you multi-level context because the Cubs just signed him to a one-year, I believe a non-guaranteed deal. But either way, they signed Clint Frazier to a one-year deal. And this is a very interesting person on lots of levels. We will discuss next right here on Parkins and Spiegel on The Score.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Downtown goes Frazier. He homers to left. And the Yankees now take a 7-0 lead.
That's good hustle by Chris Tannehill to go grab a Clint Frazier home run, unless we just happen to have one in the system. You never know.
Yeah, I put it in there last week just in case.
Shane Reardon, Chris Tannehill on the other side. Me, Matt Spiegel, solo on Parkins and Spiegel. Hub Arkish at 4 o'clock on the Bears and more. But the Cubs made a signing. Clint Frazier for 1 year, pending a physical. That is the deal. He is 27 years old. Let me take you to the 2013 Major League Baseball draft. Shall we? Mark Appel is the pick by the Astros. Chris Bryant goes number 2. John Gray, number 3 to the Rockies. Cole Stewart goes to the Twins at number 4. Clint Frazier at number 5, number 5 overall to the Cleveland Indians. Also in that draft of note, Hunter Dozier, Dom Smith, Hunter Renfro, big run on Hunters. White Sox took Tim Anderson, one pick after J.P. Crawford. So two shortstops back-to-back.
And the Yankees, didn't they get Judge also in the sandwich pick? Love the sandwich pick.
Yep, a delicious sandwich pick of Aaron Judge at number 32 in that draft. Sean Manaea later on, Michael Lorenzen. So just to give you a feel for how old Clint Frazier is. Some of those guys have been in the bigs a long time. Clint Frazier, one of the top prospects in the Indian system, traded to the Yankees for Andrew Miller, was absolutely the headliner of that Andrew Miller trade, which was a big, big deal. And he arrived with the Yankees eventually, was pretty good in 2020. In 2021, was handed the starting job in left field and hit .186 with a .633 OPS in 66 games when he was healthy. Along the way, he's had concussion symptoms for multiple seasons of his career. And then there was all like kind of the off the field stuff and just the wacky stuff that went on while during his Yankee career. Really wanted to grow his hair out. He hated the Yankees hair rule. Wanted to have a beard and super long hair. He did grow it out for a while. Joe Girardi said he's going to have to cut his hair. It's becoming a distraction at some point. Do you remember Clint Frazier was the guy who requested, Susan Waldman had reported this, asked the Yankees if he could wear number 7. And they were like, 7 is retired for Mickey Mantle. And he's like, yeah, but do you ever unretire numbers to let, you know, young players? No, you don't understand. We're the Yankees and number 7 is retired for Mickey Mantle. Yeah, no, I hear you. Like, he kept pressing the issue, did Clint Frazier. And there's been lots of moments where, like, he blew off the media and then apologized and was like a headline grabber because the way he apologized was clearly pre-scripted by the PR people. And it was a wacky, wacky run as a Yankee. And what happened to this former number 5 draft pick is that he wasn't protected. He was made available in the Rule 5 draft. Anybody could have taken him in the Rule 5 draft, 2 weeks ago? He wasn't taken. Then the Yankees had a week to decide whether to trade him or not. And on the fourth day, Brian Cashman just released him.
He rose again.
Yeah. The stone rolled and the cave was a portal, just to connect the dots back to transition for those still listening. But yes, he rose again. No, he was cut. They just said, you know what? I'm not even going to wait 3 more days and try to trade him. Yankees just complete and utter discard. Now, the dude does hammer fastballs, but he has trouble with everything else. And he's this is, you know, it's a low risk move, but that's it's I don't know. Sometimes I get excited about sort of post hype sleepers like this, but this one has a lot of baggage. I imagine the first thing he will do is grow his hair as long as possible and grow out the beard. And it's just kind of weird. The Cubs said goodbye to Michael Hermosillo today, and that's a very toolsy guy. Same kind of age group for Hermosillo, who showed some things a little bit with the Cubs during some garbage time last year. And if you're saying to yourself, I'd rather see Michael Hermosillo than take a flyer on Clint Frazier, you're not alone with that thought. Peoria Matt had texted that thought in earlier. It's not the kind of free agent deal you're all excited about to go hand in hand with everything else. It's texter says, is hitting, quote, everything else important to big league success? Hashtag go Cubs. Yeah, I think it is. Once they know you can't do the hit the off speed stuff, then they kind of go after you with that stuff. Okay. I mean, we knew this was going to be like a big time sort of wait and see off season for the Cubs, but the frenzy, the free agent frenzy is forcing them to make some decisions right now. And it feels like they're looking at the roster and they're not aggressively trying to re-enter the big spending fray right now. And they're just not doing it. And they're one of the teams that's that doesn't look great while all these other folks are getting much more active and doing more stuff. You know, I mentioned that I was going to do this, so let me do this now as long as we're here talking Cubs. The Yan Gomes signing, which they did make today, 2 years, $13 million. That's $6.5 million per for 2 years. Yan Gomes is a starter caliber catcher. But I don't believe he's here to start. I don't believe he's here to be with the Cubs to start. He's here to play a ton and help preserve the body of the guy who ought to be the best offensive player for the Cubs, and that's Wilson Contreras. And towards the end of the year, when they were talking publicly, Wilson had talked about how much he played. And, you know, Jed Hoyer then spoke directly to how much Wilson had played and what they might need to do. I want to remind you of what Jed Hoyer said about Wilson Contreras and pair that with the signing of Yan Gomes today.
Jed, you guys had that revolving door at the backup catcher position a lot this year for a lot of different reasons, but things kind of stabilized when you brought in Chirinos. Seeing how seamless that transition was for him and seeing how banged up Wilson was at the end, is bringing him back something that you guys would be considering?
Yeah, he's a great teammate. I know the coaching staff thought the world of him, and I really thought, like, you know, that his presence meant a lot to us. You know, I think with Wilson, I think he played too much, and I would just say that directly. I think that, you know, we did have that revolving door at backup catcher. It felt like we could never keep anyone healthy, and Rossi and I talked about throughout the year, it was hard to not play Wilson a lot, but he definitely got worn down. I think he's an elite offensive player, but it's hard to be an elite offensive player when your legs are gone, you know. And I think that I think that's something that we have to really focus on this offseason is building a roster and setting it up to make sure that, you know, we can keep Wilson as an elite offensive player, because you play a guy too much, and like I said, you're eventually the nicks and dings of catching and just the fatigue of your legs and things like that are going to reduce your impact. So I think that's really important. We knew given the backup catching struggles that was happening as we went, but it was something that was sort of unavoidable in a lot of ways. And hopefully we can remedy that going into next year.
I think they have. I think they just did. That one spot. Look, Yan Gomes is not here to start. He's here to play a bunch of catcher and relieve Wilson Contreras, and maybe Wilson will be your DH because the universal DH is coming. So they'll have the flexibility of that position.
Did you know Yan Gomes is Brazilian?
I did not know that.
Remember there was a storyline when the White Sox also had a Brazilian? I think it was Adrian Nieto.
No, he's as American as you or I.
Oh, okay.
Nieto. You're thinking of Andre Hienzo.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. And okay. There was this big deal that, hey, there are now two Brazilians in Major League Baseball. This is like 2013 or something like
that. Gotcha. And Yan Gomes was the second Brazilian.
He was the first Brazilian.
It's a dynamite drop in.
Yeah,
he was
no problem.
Love you.
Talk about the French Jello again, huh?
Hey, man, that was when I had one ear off of the headphones, okay? It was a different world. I was totally thrown off my game. Yeah, all right, so good. So we got a Brazilian. Not a cut or a shave, but instead a catcher.
And rumor has it that you just set back U.S.-Brazilian relations 20 years.
It's possible.
I could have.
Portuguese.
Yeah,
nice. Portuguese.
It's Portuguese.
I wanted to make
Portuguese.
Sure you knew. The Cubs now have a Brazilian.
Now I know. Thank God. All right, here's a quick question. How many backup catchers did they have last year? How many people played backup catcher other than Wilson Contreras for the Chicago Cubs last year?
Tanny, when did you get in there?
Yeah.
I know you were in there for a game, right?
Come on.
Right before the All-Star break.
Yeah, you got
number
in.
7 or 8.
I asked for number 23. They wouldn't give it to me.
No. What number backup catcher were you? What number was
my
on your jersey?
Number. My license plate. I was 7.5.
Yeah.
So 8 then speaks.
8 is the answer. Robinson Chirinos, Austin Romine, Tony Walters, PJ Higgins, Jose Lobatone, Eric Castillo, Taylor.
PJ Higgins? That's not a person.
Taylor Gushue.
I remember him.
And then Tyler Payne. All 8 of those guys. I wish Manley was here to read that list of players. Nobody reads a list of players like that.
I'm not speaking. Give me that list again. That can't be real.
Robinson Chirinos, Austin Romine, Tony Walters, PJ Higgins, Jose Lobatone, Eric Castillo, Taylor Gushue, Tyler Payne.
Bobby Chi-Chi. Love Cole Wright, but what the hell, dude?
I don't know, man.
Are we not going to get any more Bobby Chi-Chis?
No, you're not. You're not. You're going to get Jan.
With some punchies.
Yeah, Jan hit that one. It was gone. You know?
I'm Portuguese.
Miguel Amaya is going to need surgery. That just crossed yesterday. They have nobody who can play catcher. Nobody.
Except for the Brazilian.
They don't have anybody else. Except Wilson Contreras.
Where's the guy in the minor leagues who liked to look at the camera a lot? What's that guy's name?
Oh, yeah. He was fun. I like that guy.
Taylor something?
Taylor.
Right?
Not Taylor Gushue.
Or,
another Taylor.
Cubs
yeah.
catcher. Taylor.
Blonde.
Who looks at
blonde
camera.
Beard. We all thought he looked like
Taylor Davis.
What's that, Taylor Davis?
Taylor
we
Davis.
All thought he looked like Jay Zawoski because anybody with red hair and a beard looks like Jay Zawoski. That's what we've decided.
He was fun.
Yes, Taylor Davis was fun. Where is he now? He's not here. I know that much. That's why they went out and got the Brazilian. What are we? Are there famous? are there characteristics of Brazilians that might come into play here? We know that Hungarian stubbornness.
Which
is,
gender?
I don't know. We know that Hungarian stubbornness is a big factor in the Bears' problems. We know this for a fact. We've established that.
When Danny's out, we really start attacking different cultures, don't we?
Okay.
This is just
open the phones.
Yeah.
Ben, find out who the angry Hungarians are.
Let's see if they're out there.
Usually the restaurant owners.
Come on, don't make fun of him, dude. He's been making fun of him.
He's
been vomiting. There's been excrement. There's illness. There's illness going on.
Taylor Davis got 6 plate appearances last year for the National League's Pittsburgh Pirates, if you're familiar with that organization.
I am familiar with them.
2 hits?
Yes.
He had 400.
Yeah.
What are they doing, by the way, the Pirates? Just in general, what are they doing? But also signing Roberto Perez today, another backup catcher who I had on my short list for White Sox backup catcher. They signed him for $5 million. I don't know why. Maybe to flip him? Flip you for real? I don't know.
Flip you for real? It's just a body, I guess. I don't know what the hell the Pirates are doing. I mean, that question, that stands for everything but like 4 years of Neil Huntington's regime. That's it. Other than that, they've never known what the hell they're doing. They produce Gerrit Cole and they send him on his way. Thanks.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. They're making money and existing with a payroll down below $50 million while the other owners are spending.
While Max Scherzer makes more than their entire team.
Their entire team.
It's a problem.
Yes.
Different conversation, but
those who might have missed this yesterday, Max Scherzer is making $15 million for the next 3 years from the Washington Nationals, who deferred money in his contract. So add that to the $43 million he's making each year from the New York Mets, and he's at a cool $58 million per for the next 3 years. The business, she is healthy. 670, the score is where you are. Look, you know, not every time a coach does what Brian Kelly does it mean he is a bad guy. Not all of those people are bad guys. Some are just, you know, going for a better gig, and this is just how it works. But Brian Kelly's a bad guy, and I need to remind you of exactly why. We'll do that next on The Score.
Brian, this game had it all.
Yeah.
What did you think of your team's ability to withstand Florida State's impressive comeback?
I'm in favor of execution. Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight. I mean, we just didn't execute.
It's Brian Kelly a few weeks back, coach of Notre Dame. And he is gone from Notre Dame, going off to LSU. And a lot of these guys are tough to like, because overall in that business, in that realm of sports, and we'll talk to Adam Kramer a little bit later on from Bleacher Report, Kegs and Eggs about college football and all the coaching movements and all that stuff. It kind of lends itself to being a charlatan, to being a real hardcore snake oil salesman level phony. Like, you're selling team and family, and you're selling togetherness and loyalty and hard work and everything you have to sell to make a football program work. And you're selling that in living rooms as you recruit, and you're selling that to your team every year. And then, because of the way the business part is structured, sometimes you leave and all of your players find out on Twitter, or they find out when other people text them, which is how Notre Dame's players found out. And maybe you've seen by now the group text that Brian Kelly sent to everybody, all his players last night, and how he apologized to them that he couldn't tell them himself, but I'm flying into South Bend tonight after making the deal at LSU, flying into South Bend and going to have a meeting in the morning. Then this morning there was a 7 a.m. meeting for all the players. I don't know if everybody showed up. The meeting lasted 11 minutes. He called them all to a 7 a.m. meeting to confirm what he had texted them all the night before at 10 o'clock, that he was leaving, so he could tell them directly that he was leaving. Well, I mean, at least he talked to them face-to-face.
Probably even less than 11 minutes, because he was pictured driving off campus at 7-Eleven.
Was he really?
7-Eleven was the timestamp on him in his car driving off campus.
Man, so he flew in one last time to talk to his players after having sent them the group text. Nobody likes that meeting when you know the meeting is about the email that you've already gotten to and responded to.
I'm in five of them a week.
You get the group thread, and you're like, you respond to that, and then off you go. So, look, that is sleazy and that is slimy. There's obviously the very serious reason why Brian Kelly might be a bad guy, and that is, of course, the death of Declan Sullivan, who was a junior at Notre Dame, a video assistant, a video coordinator, and there was a practice that was going to be outside or inside back in 2010, October of 2010, and the athletic director was going to be there, so Brian Kelly said, we need to practice outside. And Sullivan's response was, oh man, this sucks. Less than an hour earlier, Declan Sullivan had been tweeting about the weather, said he described it as terrifying. Quote, gust of winds up to 60 miles an hour today. Will be fun at work. I guess I've lived long enough, is what Declan Sullivan tweeted. And then Brian Kelly decided to have the practice outside. The narrative was that he wanted to make sure the athletic director saw it and saw them practicing outside, wanted to impress them. And Declan Sullivan fell to his death from a 40-foot-high aerial lift, a remote-controlled aerial lift, 53-mile-an-hour winds up there. He fell to his death in the middle of a practice. 20-year-old kid. So how much was Notre Dame responsible? How much of that is specifically on Brian Kelly? That was all handled into an investigation, and there was all sorts of footage that went on there, and it was deemed that Notre Dame was at fault. So you've got that, and that's very serious stuff. So if you want to lean on that, I totally will allow it. But I'm going to lean on this. when I tell you that Brian Kelly is a bad guy. I didn't know this story until I saw it today. Brian Kelly was the head coach at Central Michigan University, and two of his assistants are now NFL head coaches. Robert Saleh of the Jets, former Niners defensive coordinator, and Matt LaFleur, the Green Bay Packers head coach. Those guys were assistants for Brian Kelly. And this was in a blog that Rob Domofsky at ESPN wrote in 2019, but it was retweeted today and I had not seen it. On a winter night in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, Matt LaFleur and Robert Saleh thought they were invited to a party at the home of their boss, Central Michigan University football coach Brian Kelly. Turns out they weren't on the guest list. They were on the worker list. "We shoveled the snow and parked all the cars," Saleh said. "Then at the end of the night, we had to go get the cars again." Then they went back to the tiny apartment they shared as graduate assistants at the time and stood around their kitchen table, the one that didn't have any chairs. Quote from Robert Saleh, "We decided right then that if we're ever in that position, we're never going to treat people the way that we got treated." And Matt LaFleur has lived up to it. Matt LaFleur is the best man at Robert Saleh's wedding. But that's what kind of guy Brian Kelly was, and I think probably still is. Is that he's the dude who invites his assistant coaches to a party and then makes them park cars and shovel snow. Jack ass!
Should have tweeted about not having any dining room chairs. People drop them off for you.
Am I right in my rage for this? Yeah. My disgust for this?
That's a good bit. It's a fun bit.
No, I mean, go ahead and tell them up front that's what you want them to do. Hey, guys, I know this isn't glorious, but you're my assistants and I need some help here for this party I'm having. So part of your job as my assistants is going to be shoveling snow and parking cars. No, instead they were invited and then he sprung it on them when they get there. Jack ass.
And don't forget that he also swept the sexual assault case of Prince Shembo under the rug.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that was 2014.
Okay, we've got that as well. Add that to the pile.
Yeah, bad guy. You should throw him in the river with some cement shoes.
Rob Domofsky said that after he wrote that story, a Brian Kelly assistant called him and yelled at him. Not Kelly. Kelly didn't call him and yell at him.
But do you think that assistant got yelled at by Brian Kelly? You better call this guy.
Yeah, you do me a favor. Go call. Not do me a favor. You know what? Go call that guy. And also come over to my house and do some shoveling. He had an assistant call Rob Domofsky to yell at him.
Coach, it's June. There's nothing to shovel.
Just do it.
I said shovel. I said get in. the Spruce Goose. And Domofsky said that he tried to get Brian Kelly for the story to write about his former assistants that he never called back. Then he writes about it, and an assistant calls Domofsky and yells at him. Man, that is just not correct. Texter says, that sounds like Parkins. No, that's not fair. Danny asked you guys if you'd come to the house and help, you know, with the move, right? He was direct about what that is. There was no bait and switch.
No. There was a bait and switch when we showed up and he was still there. but there was no bait and switch. We knew what we were getting ourselves into. There was a bait and switch when we showed up and he didn't help us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a choice.
But we've talked about that already.
Yeah, we've talked about that already.
That's out in the open.
I think Brian Kelly is worse. Brian Kelly, worse of a guy than Danny Parkins.
Yeah, Danny Parkins is not a bad guy.
No. Contrary to the amount that we dunk on him right here, whether he's
still
here,
a good guy,
whether here or
and
not.
I'm not saying that because he's 100% listening.
Uh-oh.
No, Danny's a great guy.
Texter says Brian Kelly then probably said, "How'd you like to mow my lawn?" It's exactly the Caddyshack story. Brian Kelly, the living emblem of that story, of that scene. He's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing Saturday? How'd you like to mow my lawn?" It's exactly right. Bad, bad guy. Another texter says Brian Kelly runs funny as well. All right, put it on the list. Put it on the list. It's not as high as some of the other stuff, I think. Another texter says, now I hope Notre Dame wins the national championship this year without Brian Kelly. And I hate Notre Dame. Wow, that's strong stuff right there.
Let's not say things we'll regret here, texters.
That's right. Hold on. Hold on to this, that stuff. I like the idea of Kelly telling his assistants at LSU that they need to come and shovel his walk. There's no snow here. You don't coach in the Midwest anymore. whatever. I said, come over and shovel immediately. You get over here. I saw he's trying to take the assistant coach. I'll ask Kramer later on. He's trying to take, is it Marcus Freeman, who's the defensive coordinator? He wants to take him to LSU with him. That guy might get the Notre Dame job, although probably not. We'll sort all that out with Adam Kramer. But coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.